Hello.
Hi, everyone. We're doing this in the daytime.
It's daylight outside and we're recording What the History. It's an odd feeling. But at least it gives me more time to edit it. We do edit these slightly.
We do. Just a little. We do, because we're professional.
We do things professionally.
We do.
Yes.
And have references.
You do. And talk about silly, strange and weird stuff.
Yes. And we love doing it. So thank you for all of who listen to us, comment, whatever.
Yep.
At least we're getting out there, aren't we?
We are. Still interested enough if anyone would be keen for us to do a Patreon, or if anybody out there wants to sponsor us, whatever.
Yes.
We'll do.
We will look into that.
Almost anything.
Almost.
Almost.
You might have to specify what you don't do. Trav will not strip for money.
I was going to say, PM me to find out what I won't do.
Ooh.
Yes.
You kinky little thing.
And on that note, before this gets any...
See how it always goes downhill.
Any less PG, we should get on with the podcast.
Roll down the hill.
What the... Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, a fortnightly taste of tasty bits of bizarre history to make you say what the history. You would think that by now I would have something down pat for that. I am Trevor Holland.
Come and join us for morsels.
Yes.
Of noms.
Indeed. I am Trevor Holland and the person speaking over me is...
Susie Holland, because I do that a lot.
Woo! And what bizarre, tasty piece of history have you got for us?
Okay, I'm going to put on my serious face here for a minute. God, if I can. Okay, we all know the story of the RMS Titanic, the ship that sunk quickly in icy North Atlantic waters in the early hours of April 15, 1912, after colliding with an iceberg. I've been fascinated with this real-life disaster for a great many years, and I have read many first-hand accounts of the survivors and newspaper articles over the years as well. Now, I even like James Cameron's version. Yeah, the movie Titanic. Okay. And I really like the character of Rose DeWitt Picada and her hat, which I reckon should have its own show. But anyway... But I digress, and my section of our awesome podcast is not on the Titanic and its sinking with great loss of life, but on stories that are eerily similar, which had quite a few people in the know after the Titanic disaster shaking their heads and saying the now very familiar, "What the, I am sure." To begin, I need to take you back to March 22nd in the year 1886 in London, England. The Pall Mall Gazette was an evening London newspaper, and on this date it ran a story named How the Mail Steamer Went Down in Mid-Atlantic by a Survivor, where the author, William Thomas Stead, who was an investigative journalist and reformer, look him up, he is actually pretty awesome, and he wrote this story from the perspective of a survivor, a British sailor named Thomas, of a large mail ship which collided with a bark in a fog bank on its way from Liverpool, where the ship picked up over 500 passengers, to New York. Thomas notices prior to the sinking that there are too few lifeboats for all the passengers if the unthinkable happens. In the story, the ship sinks with terrible loss of life and wild panic ensues, with the captain and crew using a revolver and various implements in an attempt to subdue the hysteric passengers and crew. Thomas survives by jumping into the water and swimming into a lifeboat. In 1892, Stead wrote another story for a monthly journal he was joint founder of, called The Review of Reviews, in its Christmas annual. The story was named From the Old World to the New. In this story, it tells of a ship named the Majestic, which lists as its passengers a man named Mr. Compton and a woman named Mrs. Irwin, who was a clairvoyant, because Stead was beginning to get involved in spiritualism at this time, like a lot of other people. Mrs. Irwin tells Mr. Compton of a dream she had where a ship called the Anne and Jane collides with an iceberg in the North Atlantic, leaving six people stranded on ice, with the rest drowning. The ship is able to rescue one passenger, Mr. Compton's friend, John Thomas, who is nursed back to health. In an even more what the twist of fate, William Thomas Stead obtained a first-class ticket on the Titanic as he was going to a peace congress at the request of US President William Howard Taft at Carnegie Hall and drowned after giving his life jacket to a person who didn't get one. Told you he was awesome. But his body was never recovered. In 1898, American author Morgan Robertson wrote a book called The Futility or the Wreck of the Titan, which also eerily echoed the Titanic sinking. In this book, not only is the ship's name similar to the Titanic, again there are too few lifeboats in case of disaster. The weight of both ships is roughly the same, and Titanic was 25 meters longer than the Titan. Both ships were described as unsinkable, and both collided with icebergs. But Robertson was an experienced maritime seaman and knew that massive ships in the Atlantic run the risk of colliding with icebergs. But still, a bit what the. And that's mine, short and sweet, but very what the.
That is a big, big what the.
Yeah, I thought it was amazing. I mean, William's Stead's, I'm not even if his name is Stead or Stead, so I just pronounced it as Stead because that's what it looks like to me. But yeah, him perishing on the Titanic after writing a story that had remnants of the Titanic disaster in it, if that makes any sense. Yeah. I thought that was just really strange. And he's such a really cool guy, guys. Go and check him out.
Yeah, very well. I mean, speaking of cool guys, that's all I've got. That's all I can come up with to join these two together.
Oh, the segue.
The segue.
You know, the segues are very important.
I know. Now, I will, before I start, just do a little couple of qualifiers for this one. The subject of my particular topic, there are a number of contradictory accounts of his adventures, I suppose you could say, around the place. So I've tried to go with the most consistent across those as part of this.
As a good research does.
And also, this following story contains French names, words, and places. So if you get upset with the French language being murdered by someone who cannot pronounce it very well, I apologize in advance.
You should say, excusez-moi.
I'll probably mess that up too. Anyway, do you enjoy a gripping detective story?
Yes.
The type where the detective uses disguises to infiltrate the seedy underground to find his target. Or perhaps where the protagonist uses his wit and observation, or even takes a more scientific approach to catch his man. I'm sure this will turn your mind to Edgar Allan Poe's character Auguste Dupin, or even Sherlock Holmes from the mind of Arthur Conan Doyle. The name François-Eugène Vidot may not come to mind, however he provided much of the inspiration for detectives, both fictional and real. Born in 1775 in Arras, France, young François kept himself busy stealing from his parents. At the age of 13, he stole a number of silver plates from his home, sold them, and spent the proceeds all within one day. He was arrested 3 days later after his father arranged for the police to catch him to teach him a lesson. He left home at the age of 14, with varying accounts offering an explanation. In one story, he stole 2,000 francs from his parents' bakery and fled. In others, he accidentally killed his fencing instructor and fled. I even found one reference to a marriage that was being arranged for him, from which he fled. By the age of 15, he had joined a travelling circus where he ate raw meat in the freak show and had a romantic liaison with a young actress. When he turned 16, he joined up with the Bourbon Regiment, fighting the Prussian army. He made quite the impression on his superiors and rose to the rank of senior lieutenant. He also had a reputation of being a bit of a firebrand, and during his military career, he challenged 14 people to duels, reportedly killing two of them. This eventually led to his military downfall when, after a disagreement, he challenged a superior officer to a duel, which was refused. François struck the officer, which was considered a hanging offence, so he fled. But he used his developing talent in disguising himself to have a series of adventures. He spent time as a card shark in Brussels, disguised as an army captain. He got into brawls, he got involved with robbery and forgery, and even had the occasional legitimate job. He was arrested many times and had a number of daring escapes, reportedly escaping one prison by dressing as a nun. Another account had him leaping from a third-story window into a river and swimming to his freedom. Francois was also well known with the criminal underworld, particularly after he helped another inmate to escape by forging release papers. Despite the seeming criminal intent, when Francois learned that a guard was being blamed for the release, he admitted to the crime, leading him to be sentenced in 1798 to serve 8 years in the naval galleys, considered the worst prison in the land. He was there for 8 days. He bribed a guard for a sailor's suit, disguised himself accordingly, and simply walked out the front gate in full view of the guards. He spent most of the following year as a privateer before authorities caught up with him, capturing him as he stepped off the boat and sending him back to the galleys with his sentence doubled. He escaped again, this time disguising himself as a mourner at a funeral procession. After he refused to join a gang of robbers, they reported him to the police, and Francois found himself with the option of spending the rest of his life in jail. Instead, he offered to become an informant, infiltrating the criminal underworld with his true identity only being revealed when he took the stand to provide evidence against the criminals. Francois was then given new papers, a false identity, and was sent on his way. He spent the next few years going from town to town, engaging in work both legitimate and criminal, moving on if he was recognised. He kept this up until 1809, when, possibly because he was tired of being on the run, he approached Jean Henry, the head of the criminal department in Paris, and offered to become a police spy. Due to his connections, Francois was allowed to feign an escape from the police to cement his reputation in the criminal underworld, where he took up the role of an undercover police agent. In his own words, Francois believed his duty was, and I quote, to prevent crimes, discover malefactors, and to give them up for justice, end quote. His fresh approach was cemented, excuse the pun in advance, when he became the first person to take a plaster cast of a boot print found in a garden outside a crime scene. As he had connections, he already had a firm suspicion of who the culprit was and was able to match the cast to the boots worn by the suspect. His successes led him to push for the creation of a formal plainclothes division, and so by 1812, the Brigade de la Sûreté was formally established with Francois as its head. With the blessing of Napoleon. The regular police were not too thrilled with this new department, suspecting Francois of taking bribes or even staging the crimes that led to his department's great success rate. Nothing could be proven, but regardless of any alleged underhandedness, by 1817, Francois was pardoned for his previous crimes. In 1822, he raised the bar again, extracting a bullet from a body so he could compare it to ones fired from the pistol of a suspect. In 1825, he used bloodstain evidence to track down and trap a murderer. By 1826, he was working on how to use fingerprint evidence and experimenting with ink and paper. He may not have been all that successful in this endeavour, but as a side effect, he developed a special form of paper that was very difficult to forge, which later became the basis for French currency. He established case files and a filing system to keep track of them. A new prefect of police was elected in 1827, who definitely did not approve of Francois and his techniques, so he retired, only to be reinstated as deputy prefect in 1830. Working as part of the police bigwigs did not suit him, and he retired again in November of 1833. Not to rest in his laurels, by January of 1834, he had set up Le Bureau de Resignements, largely held to be the world's first private detective agency. He employed over 40 agents, most of whom were ex-convicts, and established a reputation for getting criminals the police couldn't catch, and made headlines across Europe after cracking a number of high-profile cases. The police were still not that keen on him, however, and by 1848, Francois closed the agency and spent much of his remaining years writing his memoirs, including many tales of exciting duels, brawls, and daring escapes with himself as a hero. They also detailed a number of his techniques, more on that in a moment. He was also friends with a number of authors of the time, including Victor Hugo, Honoré de Balzac, Eugène Sue, and Alexandre Dumas, leading to speculation that the stories of his exploits were not entirely written by him. Francois died on 1st of May 1857, but he left behind quite the legacy. His crime solving established a number of techniques still in use today, such as undercover police works, the study of ballistics, casts of footprints, securing of crime scenes, and forensic anthropometrics, or using the human body measurements in criminal investigations. As for literary inspiration, he is considered to be, at least partially, the basis for Sherlock Holmes, Jean Valjean and Inspector Javert in Les Miserables, Abel Magwitch, a fugitive who appears in Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, and even Agatha Christie's great detective, Hercule Poirot. Okay.
Poirot.
I told you my pronunciation is not good. So, when the next episode of Sherlock finally makes it to our screens, please take a moment to consider the man who helped to inspire the hit series and give a hearty What the History for Francois Eugène Vidot.
I love that story.
This guy's amazing.
God, that's awesome.
But again, like, because a lot of what is known about him came from his memoirs, but then I'm sure, like, some of the more swashbuckling stuff in there, you know, it could potentially be
a bit embellished.
And then you've got other authors who obviously loved hanging around this guy and got great inspiration from him, so you can imagine what they wrote about him.
Jeez, what a great group to hang around with.
Though. Yeah, that's...
That's wonderful. Yay!
Yeah.
I really love that story.
I'm just shocked I've never heard of this guy before, because, yeah, he's amazing.
That's what we do here at What the History. We like to uncover stuff that people and books have covered.
Yeah.
Like, covered over, or no one remembers anymore, and these things should be remembered.
Yeah. Or it's part of a bigger story that normally gets glossed over, because I think that's what originally started with me wanting to do this, was I was listening to a history podcast about something, and they mentioned, like, a little offhand, funny little aside. I was like, I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
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 Don't leave the funny asides aside.
So thank you, asides, because without asides, we wouldn't have what we have today.
Absolutely. And if you have enjoyed what you've heard today, we do have more available. You can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you will find all our previous episodes. You can even leave comments on the episodes right on the webpage. You'll also find on each episode the list of our references. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you go down into the description of this episode, you'll see this episode's references. I'm talking in circles now.
You are. Okay, I've been doing that with mine too.
That's all good. Now, if you do want to get in touch with us, send us comments. Like I said, we've got the webpage. You can find the What the History podcast Facebook page very easily, or you can find us at pod_what on Twitter, or just use the hashtag WTHpod to track us down that way. And we also have an email address, which is WTHpod@rufusproject.com, as we are part of the Rufus Project Network. And I don't normally plug it, but so totally listen to the Rufus Project podcast as well. The last episode, we tried to redeem the movie Warcraft.
Woo! You know, and you guys out there, Trev and Christian, who is the other awesome person that does redeeming features, they have to go through a hell of a lot of weird stuff to bring all the good stuff and bring the, shall we redeem this or shall we not? Yeah, that's many hours spent watching weird-ass movies, guys. Props. Yeah.
Watch one dodgy movie every 2 weeks.
Some of these movies are really great. Most of them, maybe not.
Anyway. Yes, well, anyway, if you want to know more about that, go to rufusproject.com. Yes, please. There we go. And I think on that note, this has been quite an interesting one about some very, very, very interesting individuals.
That's right. I love that guy.
Yeah. So, but definitely come back in a couple of weeks' time. We'll have two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night, everyone. Or good day.
See you then.